This is the Presidential Inauguration, live on XM Public Radio.
We are broadcasting live from the west front steps of the U.S. Capitol, just a few feet away from where President George W. Bush will take his oath, a spot which we have. An incredible spot, by the way, which we have due to the efforts of our partners in this broadcast, Capital News Connection with PRI, covering Congress for public radio stations nationwide. I'm Scott Walterman, XM Satellite Radio News, and seated with me here at the Capitol is CNC's founder and bureau chief.
Good morning, Scott and everyone. I'm Melinda Wittstock. President Bush's motorcade has just arrived, and in an hour from now, the President of the United States will raise his right hand, place the other on a Bible, and swear to faithfully execute the office of the President and preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution.
Over the next 3 hours, as we broadcast live from the event, we'll be talking to many people, former presidential speechwriters, lawmakers, commentators from both the right and the left, and of course we will hear from XM's own Bob Edwards.
The United States Marine Band is about to start performing. We've been seeing dignitaries arrive here, the U.S. Supreme Court, cabinet members, members of Congress, the House and the Senate. John Kerry, the failed presidential contender, arrived just 10 minutes ago. And soon the president's motorcade will wind around to the back of the U.S. Capitol, the east side. We're here on the west front. This is where he will be making his inaugural address. He'll face huge crowds stretching down the mall to the Washington Monument and the rest of the country.
This is the 55th time we have gathered here to inaugurate a president, an event steeped in history, marked by all the pomp and pageantry Americans have come to associate with this date, January 20th, but also unprecedented security, this being the first inaugural since the attacks of September 11th.
You know, Scott, we've all been fingerprinted, photographed. We've had our backgrounds checked just so we could sit up here. Now, we're the only radio network to share this scaffolding with TV network cameras perched here above the bulletproof glass that's going to protect the president. From here, it kind of looks like the world's biggest wedding, you know, but for those sharpshooters all around us.
You're right. There's about 6,000 police officers, 2,500 military personnel on hand to guard about 100,000 people who showed up. They were expecting about 250,000, but the crowd estimates are slightly less. It's very cold here. It's 34 degrees is the actual temperature. But with a 14-mile-an-hour wind, it feels like 25 degrees. We've got a coat of snow over Washington. It snowed much of the day yesterday. Cloudy skies, but at least it's not snowing.
It's not snowing, though, that's right. And perhaps it's a little warmer, but I doubt it, where Chad Pergram is standing by right now. He's the chief correspondent of Capital News Connection, and he's in Lafayette Park, just outside the White House, where the president's motorcade left about 10 minutes or so. Chad, what can you tell us?
Well, the president's motorcade came out. It was for a little bit longer than what you usually see, a cavalcade of black sedans with the tinted windows, and, of course, the presidential limousine right in the middle. It's a new model that they brought out specifically for this inauguration. Has the presidential seal emblazoned on both doors. The doors are twice as thick as a typical sedan. A lot of very stern-looking secret service officers riding in the vehicles behind them. There's one vehicle that always rides a couple of vehicles back. They call it the Batmobile because it has so much firepower in it and all sorts of gadgets in case there were to be an unfortunate incident or something. And, of course, an ambulance always brings up the rear of the presidential motorcade in case there were to be an emergency. The president was led up to the White House with a team of motorcycle police officers, and right now they're just doing some last-minute preparations at the review stand across from the White House here in Lafayette Park.
Chad, the former president of the United States, Bill Clinton, is just arriving with his wife, Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton, thought to be a possible Democratic contender in 2008. The pomp and circumstance here is really kind of ramping up. Tell us a little bit what the mood was like in the crowd where you were standing, Chad.
Well, some of the crowds were very excited. They were teaming to get into different breakfasts and things this morning. A lot of the members of Congress representing them from the Republican side were having breakfast, and they came in. And people were just very excited. I talked to some who had never been here to Washington, D.C. Some were amazed at the level of security. And one fellow I talked with from Columbia, Maryland, said he was amazed at how lax the security was, actually. He told me that he was at church with the president and was amazed at how close he was able to get and didn't have a badge. In fact, commented on this to some of the Secret Service officers.
Okay, Chad, well, thanks very much. We'll get back to you a little bit later in the broadcast. Chad Pergram of Capital News Connection. You can hear his localized reporting from Congress on your public radio station.
You are listening to live coverage of the presidential inauguration on XM Satellite Radio. We are broadcasting from the steps of the U.S. Capitol building. This is, Melinda, the most expensive inaugural in American history, with the celebrations, the balls, the parties, the receptions. I think the ultimate price tag is about $40 million.
Yeah, that's all private money. That doesn't even account for the $66 million the taxpayer will have to pay just by virtue of it being a federal holiday. Federal employees don't have to work today. But you know, Scott, most wartime inaugurations have been rather more muted. The price tag has given some pause with troops still in the crosshairs in Iraq. Now, David Kuznet was President Clinton's chief speechwriter, penned this famous line from his first inaugural address back in 1993. There's nothing wrong with America that cannot be cured by what is right with America. Welcome, David.
Thank you for having me.
You know, we've heard that as of last night, there had been 21 drafts of the president's speech so far. Is that normal?
I think it is. This is one of the most important speeches that a president gives. And presidents want to make sure that they have it just right. If I remember right, with President Clinton, for his first inaugural speech went through about 25 drafts, and then he was editing it as he rehearsed it the night before.
Yeah, and he had a reputation for tinkering a little bit with the speech, perhaps a little bit more than President Bush.
Well, he's a brilliant improvisational speaker, and he really had not worked with prepared text before running for president. So he was used to getting up at a podium with very few notes and winging it and doing very well.
Now, obviously, that's a vast difference from President Bush's style, who is a fair speaker when reading from a speech and a not-so-good speaker when speaking off the cuff. What challenges does that present to a speechwriter?
Well, I imagine it's very different. With President Clinton, he had a thought process that really ran ahead of his staffing process. I mean, he would work out in his own mind what he wanted to say, and we would be, as we used to say, some of the best paid stenographers in America, taking down whatever was his latest iteration of what he wanted to say and tinkering with it a little bit and giving it back to him, and then he'd improve on it again.
David, we've heard that the president is going to focus a lot of his speech, just 17 minutes today, on liberty and the theme of liberty. Is this a day to spend his political capital, as he referred to it, or is it more of a day to unite and not divide?
Well, traditionally, the inauguration ceremony is a time to unite the country. It comes several months after an election campaign, which of necessity divides the country. And when he steps forward to take the oath of office, the president is not the leader of a party or even a leader of the government, but he's really stepping forward as the leader of the country. So the inaugural is a ceremony of unification, but it's also a time when a president lays out the general ideas that he's going to be trying to advance during his term over the next 4 years.
David, the former president, Jimmy Carter, has just arrived now with his wife, Rosalind. Tell me, the president is going through a transition with his speechwriters right now. Last time around, it was Michael Gerson. He's now transitioning to the Wall Street Journal's William McGurn. Does that present a challenge today?
Well, I believe, is the last speech that he's going to be giving with the assistance of Michael Gerson as his chief speechwriter. Michael Gerson's moving up to a policy position, so I imagine he's always going to be, as long as he's in the White House, he's always going to be involved somewhat in speechwriting, but that won't be his primary responsibility after today. I think it's a special challenge because President Bush and Michael Gerson, I think really had had a kind of a mind meld with each other. And they had probably a closer working relationship than any president and speechwriter since John Kennedy and Theodore Sorensen. And to be working with a new person, I think probably will be something of a challenge.
Okay, David, thanks very much. Hang with us. We're going to get back to you a little bit later. David Kuznick, President Clinton's former speechwriter. But first, if you just joined us, you're listening to live coverage of the 55th presidential inauguration. I'm Melinda Woodstock.
And I'm Scott Walterman. We are sitting on the west side of the U.S. Capitol as everyone in Washington, who is anyone in Washington, has now gathered to hear the president's oath and speech, which, of course, we will bring you in the course of this broadcast. We'll also be talking to some lawmakers for reaction, a presidential historian, commentators from the left and right, as well as our own reporters who are dotted along the parade route with the tens of thousands of protesters and supporters.
Now we can listen to some music. I believe this is Windley Phipps. We'll just listen to a moment. Scott, you know, with the president's approval rating up only slightly since the election, and much of the country still disapproving of his handling of the war in Iraq and other domestic issues, we're going to turn now to Chris Arterton. He's a Democratic pollster and the dean of George Washington University's Graduate School of Political Management. Welcome, Chris.
Welcome. Yes. Good morning.
Good morning. What kind of bump in the polls might the president expect from his inaugural address?
Well, I do think that the theme of liberty is a good one for him to strike because it has both foreign policy implications and certainly goes to some of the concerns that people have had about the Patriot Act and its influence on American politics. So I think that it will be a unifying theme, for not just for the speech, but again for the country, as David said.
We look at the way that the vote went down and red and the blue states and the red and the blue counties. What do your polls tell you that people want to hear from both of those factions?
Well, I think that for many Democrats, they now recognize that George Bush is the elected president of the United States. There certainly are diehards who will never like him, but I think for the vast majority of the public, this is a different election than 2000 was, because it really is an election where the legitimacy of office is clear, and people will accept that.
Here he was able to do something that his father couldn't do, and we're seeing President George H.W. Bush and Barbara Bush shortly to arrive out on the west front steps of the Capitol. It must be a proud moment for the president's father, perhaps a bittersweet one as he was denied a second term himself. How concerned do you think the president actually is, Chris, about his legacy? Do people care? Does he care?
Oh, I think he cares very much, and in part I think he cares because of what he's accomplished in the last 3 years. I think he decided very early on with his advisors that he couldn't repeat the mistake of his father, which was to govern from the center. And so he has used the first term to reinforce his base, to make sure that the conservative wing of the Republican Party didn't desert him, to hold them in place. And now he has another 4 years. And I suspect he may move back toward the center to become a bit more like George W. Bush, governor of Texas, was, rather than George W. Bush, 43rd president of the U.S. during his first term.
Chris, thanks a lot. Chris Arterton, dean of the George Washington University's Graduate School of Political Management. He will be with us through the broadcast.
If you're joining us just here now on XMPR, XM Satellite Radio's public radio channel, we're broadcasting live, just feet away from where President Bush will take his second oath of office. That's expected about 45 minutes from now. I'm Melinda Wittstock of Capital News Connection.
And I'm Scott Walterman, XM Satellite Radio News. In a few moments, we're going to chat with Bob Edwards, host of XM's Bob Edwards Show. But first, let's check in with our reporters who are along the parade route here in Washington, D.C., with the protesters and the supporters. Let's go first to Chris Barnes, who is with the protesters. Chris? I take it Chris isn't ready to go yet?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah. Hey, Chris,
there we go.
What's going on?
Well, my assignment largely to experience this American tradition from the point of view of the regular folks who have made their way in to see it. And for those who do not have tickets or credentials and who did not do some homework beforehand, I must say it was a bit of a difficult quest to find the proper access point to Pennsylvania Avenue. But I made it down here in the end after a lot of asking, a lot of walking, did find a general admission access point at Pennsylvania and 13th. And once I got to that point, it was a pretty quick, easy in. The quick pat-down search, and you're in. And now the folks around me, while security is huge, it's a pretty loose crowd. No large shows of any protest so far along the parade route, at least not where I'm standing. We do have some folks here in the crowd surrounding me with a few signs, a few buttons, indicating opposition in particular to the war. I've also heard a lot of folks chatting about the gay marriage issue. Other than that, not any large show-stealing protests in the area, aside from about a half dozen sweatsuited young adults who are all wearing sweatshirts bearing the words, "Run Against Bush." And they've made a couple of passes through this general admission area. But there's little else so far in the way of protests here. And when the president and first lady did pass by a little while ago in their motorcade, swiftly bound for the Capitol.
Thank you, Chris. Let's bring it back here to the west steps of the Capitol for a second.
Now here, President George H.W. Bush, his wife Barbara on his arm, are coming through essentially the front door of the U.S. Capitol, facing out towards the majestic scene on the Mall, stretching down to the Washington Monument. They're being given a standing ovation. Now, Laura Strickler of Capitol News Connection, our reporter here on the scene here on the West Front Step. She's down in the stands a little bit below where the former president is arriving. Laura, there must have been a lot of anticipation. Just describe the mood and the scene where you are.
Yeah, it's very festive here. We're just about six rows away from the podium. Believe it or not, there's still some empty seats here. But back behind us, it's packed, and we've got all kinds of people here. You'd think they'd all be campaign donors, but actually quite a few of them are just here because they happen to know someone who works in the printing office or asked their congressman for a ticket. There's about 38 high school students from Hattiesburg, Mississippi, sitting in the very front row, a bunch of teenagers who were just joking around with Senator Kerry right up top.
So are most of these people involved in the president's campaign?
Some of them are involved. Not a lot of volunteers. There's a Nebraska college professor, a retired florist from Florida, few campaign volunteers, but one thing's for sure, almost everyone, their top concern has to do with national security, and that's why they supported Bush. But there are even a few Democrats here.
Okay, Laura Strickler, thank you very much for joining us. We're going to check in with you a little bit later in the broadcast. Laura reports for Capitol News Connection.
We are sitting here on a riser just off to the president's left when he stands at the podium to take the oath and give his speech, literally just feet away from where the president will be standing. Supreme Court Chief Justice William Rehnquist will administer the oath despite his recent surgery and chemotherapy treatment for thyroid cancer. Wasn't clear until just a few days ago whether or not he was going to be able to administer the oath. He is 80 years old and, of course, going through this medical treatment.
Yeah, Scott, that's right. Political observers will be watching closely for clues as to whether there will soon be another Supreme Court confirmation hearing. Many think that's likely to be a very bitter fight between Republicans and Democrats and that it could dominate President Bush's ambitious legislative agenda over the next 4 years. Before we see Rehnquist, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, Dennis Hastert, of course, will administer the oath to the Vice President, Dick Cheney. That's going to be shortly after 11:30 a.m. Eastern time.
You can hear the U.S. Marine Band playing for the crowd that has gathered. Many people were here when we got here, and we've been here now for several hours. The first President Bush has taken his seat next to one of his other sons, Jeb Bush, the governor of the state of Florida.
The official program, of course, begins just about 10 minutes from now, 11:30 Eastern, 9:30 Pacific, and it'll start with Senator Trent Lott of Mississippi. Now, Lott is the former majority leader, forced to resign 2 years ago after what many thought were racially insensitive remarks. Today, he's in his role as chairman of the Joint Congressional Inauguration Committee, charged with organizing all the festivities. The House Minority Leader, California Democrat Nancy Pelosi, is also on that committee, and earlier today, I spoke with her about what it takes to get an event on this scale organized in less than 5 weeks.
The committee for the inauguration is a bipartisan committee. While you don't know who's going to be the president, you do know there is going to be an inauguration. So the plans start much earlier than the election. The military has a great deal to do with the actual inaugural ceremony, so it always goes off perfectly. They really are experts in what they do, and the Capitol Police provide a great deal of security, so it usually is perfect. I mean, I've never seen it be anything but perfect.
Now, we all know it's bitterly rancorous up here on the Hill. What does the president need to say today to heal those wounds? Is there anything he can say in his speech that will please Democrats?
Well, the Democrats, of course, congratulate the president on his day, his inauguration, and look forward to hearing his words. We hope that his speech will be more of a reaching out, hands across the aisle to work cooperatively for the American people rather than the tipping of the glove to come out slugging after the speech is over.
Now, there has been a lot of criticism of this inauguration, $40 million, one of the most lavish, certainly, especially in a time of war. Do you think it's a little bit too extravagant?
My concern with the is not with the Republicans is not their parties, it's their politics, it's their policy, which I think is something that we will debate after the inauguration. But we want to advance a democratic positive agenda for creation of jobs, expanding access to health care, expanding opportunity for education, earliest childhood to higher education for all American children. Clean and safe environment, a world at peace, accountability in terms of our budget. We have a very positive agenda. We hope to work with the White House on it. So it's the policies, not the parties, that are of concern to us. It's up to the president and his administration to set the tone for how we go forward. If they think that this is appropriate at this time, I'd rather be concerned about undermining Social Security than how much money they spend on parties.
And that was Nancy Pelosi, the House Minority Leader, Democrat of California, speaking to me earlier.
Melinda, Bob Edwards, who hosts the Bob Edwards Show on XM Satellite Radio on this channel, XMPR, channel 133, and I chatted earlier. Bob has seen all of this before as host of NPR's Morning Edition for almost 20 years. We asked him for a little historical perspective. You know, I know it sort of seems trite to say something like this, but every 4 years, regardless of how you voted in the election or what you believe, we all sort of do come together, in spirit at least, if not physically, to inaugurate the president, peaceful transition of power, and so on and so forth. I just wanted to start with your general thoughts on the process itself.
Yeah, it's a... There are two different kinds of celebrations. There's the bipartisan celebration of the transition of power. This is the 55th quadrennial inauguration, the regularly scheduled ones.
Right.
There have been extras owing to the deaths and, in Nixon's case, resignation of a president. But yes, that is supposed to be what we're celebrating, and that it is outlined in our Constitution. We're celebrating our democracy. There is, of course, the other celebration. If you are a Republican, this is the spike in the end zone.
Right.
The election being your touchdown, and this is time to party. And they're doing a good job of it.
Well, this is the first inauguration post 9/11. So, of course, you have the a new world completely in terms of security. But in general, do you think inaugurations have changed either
the way we view them or the way that they're organized over the years. I wonder if people look at the inauguration of the president today the way they did when Kennedy or Johnson or Eisenhower was inaugurated. Is it as special as it was?
Yeah, I think so. And they've perhaps improved in some cases. The Grant inaugural broke out into a food fight. It was extremely cold. People were dropping. They had decorations that included canaries in cages. The canaries froze. Not a pretty sight. So we probably do this better now than we did. I hope so.
A food fight.
Then you had the Grant administration, which was worse.
Right, which was essentially a food fight, yeah. Over the years, any thing that unusual like that that comes to mind?
Well, there is, of course, the unfortunate William Henry Harrison inaugural, in which the fellow gave his address, which was actually a lecture on the Roman Empire.
That was Bob Edwards talking to Scott Walterman earlier. I just want to let everybody know the Vice President, Dick Cheney, is about to come out on the west steps of the Capitol. Just a moment ago, the First Lady, Laura Bush, arrived. The Bush twins, Barbara and Jenna, are seated right in the at the front. Behind them, we have Jeb Bush, the governor of Florida, and, of course, the presidential parents, the former president of the United States, George H.W. Bush, as well as Barbara Bush. In any moment now, we'll see Dick Cheney, the vice president, arriving. We can see through our camera feed the vice president, along with the Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist and many other luminaries, just waiting to make their entrance. Still here with us is David Kuznet, President Clinton's chief speechwriter in 1992 and 93. David, we were talking a little bit earlier in the broadcast about how these inaugural speeches actually get written. Tell me how you think, from what you know of the current White House, how the kind of strategies compare with what you were used to.
Well, I think that If President Clinton was something of a teacher and a preacher and even a jazz musician, then President Bush has the style of a corporate executive. And my guess is that they began work on it quite some time ago. He probably gave general direction to his speechwriting staff, which through today is headed by Michael Gerson. And they went back and forth with him, according to most accounts, with about 20 drafts.
David, if I may, it looks like the vice president is now standing right at the entrance to walk out. You're listening to live coverage of the presidential inauguration on XM Satellite Radio.
Now, David, of course,
and here he comes.
You can hear the cheers from the crowd here assembled. The entire House of Representatives, or at least the Republicans among them, Democrats too, the few that are here on their feet for the Vice President arriving. We can see him with Tom DeLay, the House Majority Leader from Texas, and Bill Frist, the Senate Majority Leader from Tennessee. David, of course the president has a stronger majority in Congress now. How much of a challenge, however, will it be to unite his party, where the fissures run rather deep on Iraq and immigration, spending, the deficit? There seems like there could be a fight for the soul of the party between social conservatives and fiscal conservatives. A challenge ahead.
Well, I think so. He's also, well, he wouldn't want to be described this way, he's also a lame duck. He's never going to run for office again, and his term get, and this would be his last term, and very soon a lot of the people we're seeing in the TV screens are going to be maneuvering to be the Republican nominee next time out, and there's going to be all kinds of dividing lines and all kinds of issues. I'd add Social Security to your list of issues where he can't count on support from his own party.
Now, you've been inside a White House. What changes when you are in your second term? Obviously, you don't have to worry about being reelected.
Well, I think what changes is, to the extent that the White House is a political institution and the people who work there are political players, their next focus is on a game that the incumbent president won't be playing in. There is maneuvering for who will be the successor. And
David,
I think that's especially true with this White House.
David, we're seeing pictures now of the President of the United States just taking the walk down the steps inside the Capitol towards the door while he will make his entrance for the second time to take his oath of office. One of only 14 presidents, the 14th, to actually be elected to a second term of office. We can see him on our camera feed taking that walk down from our perch here, just 40 feet away from where the president will be taking his second oath and making his inaugural speech. A lot of anticipation in the crowd as the U.S. Marine Band plays.
At the bottom of the steps and stretched out for as far as we can see, it's a sea of people who have come to watch the event, in addition to the dignitaries who are seated up at the same level that the president and vice president will be taking their oath. Snowed yesterday in Washington. We have snow on the ground throughout much of the city, but it is not as cold as it was, and the wind has died down some.
Yes, I was thinking of Bob talking about those dead canaries earlier this morning. It felt like we might be joining their ranks. Awfully cold here. The wind whistles through where we're sitting. You might be able to tell from just the lack of noise, the kind of hush of anticipation.
Of course, this is the big moment.
It really is. And in a moment, the president will be making his way out. He'll be accompanied by the former Senate Majority Leader, Trent Lott, who's chairman of this inauguration committee.
And we'll be hearing Hail to the Chief any second now. You're listening to live coverage of the 55th inauguration on XM Satellite Radio.
The House Sergeant at Arms, Bill Livingood, chairman of the Joint Congressional Committee on Inaugural Ceremony, Senator Trent Lott. Senator Christopher Dodd, the Speaker of the House, J. Bennett Hastert, Senate Majority Leader Reuben H. Chris.
Now we can see a smile on the face of the President just moments away from being announced.
Ladies and gentlemen, the
As the president made his way down the aisle, stopping to shake hands with his father, he's now taking his seat. Now, the vice president is sworn in. There, it's kind of vague language. There's very specific language about what, how you inaugurate the president, but the wording in the Constitution is somewhat vague when it comes to the vice presidential inauguration.
And a lot of that will be to do with Dennis Hastert, the House Speaker. He will be swearing in the vice president of the United States. That's time for about 10 to 15 minutes from now. The president will take his oath of office coming up to 12 noon Eastern. That's 9 a.m. Pacific. We're hearing the U.S. Marine Band. We have a program ahead now that will start with Trent Lott, the senator from Mississippi, Republican, who was once the Senate Majority Leader. And the crowds look, a little bit cold, but certainly the air is filled with anticipation as we await the president's speech.
I think things warmed up when he walked out. Everybody got up, stood up, started cheering. It helps a lot to stand as opposed to sitting in this kind of weather.
That's right. And we'll be hearing some musical selections today. Two mezzo-sopranos. We will be hearing from Denise Graves, who made the role of Carmen memorable in one of her performances. Also, Susan Graham, who actually reigns from Mr. Bush's, I guess, adopted hometown of Midland, Texas. They'll be coming up in a couple of minutes.
It is now 11:35 here in Washington, D.C. You are listening to live coverage of the 55th presidential inauguration, the second inauguration of George W. Bush as President of the United States, live on XM Satellite Radio, coast to coast via digital stereo.
Scott, you know, the president today, we've had some excerpts released from the White House late last night about what he was expected to say today. He's going to tell the country that events and common sense have led him to just one conclusion, the quote here being, the survival of liberty in our land increasingly depends on the success of liberty in other lands. The best hope for peace in our world is the expansion of freedom in all the world. Now, with the war in Iraq still not ended, and Iran last night actually issuing a warning to the United States not to attack it. Obviously, a lot of people will be interpreting that particular line. Does it mean that the war on terror will be expanded? There's a lot of talk of that. We look forward anxiously to what the rest of the president's 17-minute speech will say.
It's going to be interesting over the next 4 years to see what direction the administration takes, if they alter in any way the course of the first 4 years. They did garner a win in the popular vote in the country. Some people feel that he now feels empowered, given a mandate to govern. An interesting polling data released today shows that a lot of people who were polled do not believe he, in fact, has that mandate.
I believe there was an NBC poll that said only 33% of the country thought he had a mandate. Now we're just about to hear from Trent Lott, the former Senate Majority Leader, Senator from Mississippi.
Mr. President, Mr. Vice President, Mr. Speaker, members of the United States Congress, Reverend clergy, fellow Americans, welcome to the United States Capitol and the 55th presidential inauguration, where in a few moments, President George W. Bush and Vice President Richard B. Cheney will reaffirm their solemn oaths of obligation to support and defend the Constitution. The inaugural ceremony is a seminal moment in our nation's history. It's the culmination of a triumphant democratic process that for centuries has placed power in the will of the people, and a unique moment when our leaders stand before the nation and take an oath to uphold a set of principles chosen by those people. It is a time when all Americans can unite in appreciation for our great republic while looking to the future with confidence and vision. This ceremony, like the shining dome of the Capitol above us, is an enduring symbol of America's strength and stability in both challenging and prosperous times. As President Ronald Reagan said in his first inaugural address, freedom and the dignity of the individual have been more available here than any other place on earth. The price of this freedom at times has been high, but we have never been unwilling to pay that price. Since we last met here, America has been challenged, and it has responded to those great tests with strength and steadfast courage of conviction. We have responded by continuing to be a beacon of hope that has led so many from the shadows of tyranny into the light of freedom. Today, we honor America. Today, we celebrate the ever-expanding opportunities of her people. And today, we also honor the brave men and women of our armed forces who sacrificed to guarantee our freedom. They're standing vigil today to spread peace and freedom to millions throughout the world. Since 1789, Americans have gathered in peaceful, dignified ceremonies to transfer and reaffirm the authority of our chief executives. So it is that we gather here again today, looking out over the expanse of greatness that is America, to celebrate our nation, to commemorate its rich history of achievement, to advance the intrepid hopes that reside in the hearts of our citizens, and to give thanks to God for his blessings upon us all. In that spirit, I call now on the Reverend Dr. Louis Leon, who will deliver the invocation. Dr. Leon.
Let us pray. Most gracious and eternal God, we gather today as a grateful people who enjoy the many blessings you have bestowed on this nation. We are grateful for your vision which inspired the founders of our nation to create this democratic experiment as one nation, under God, indivisible with liberty and justice for all. We are grateful to you that you have brought to these shores a multitude of peoples of many ethnic, religious, and language backgrounds, and yet have fashioned one nation out of so many cultures and traditions. Even as we celebrate this great moment, we remember before you the members of our armed forces. We commend them to your care. Give them courage to carry out their duties, and courage to face the perils which beset them, and grant them always a sense of your presence in all that they do. Finally, today, we are especially grateful for this inauguration, which marks a new beginning in our journey as a people and a nation. We pray that you will shower the elected leaders of this land, and especially George, our president, and Richard, our vice president, with your life-giving spirit. Fill them with a love of truth and righteousness, that they may serve you and this nation ably and glad to do your will. Endow their hearts with your spirit of wisdom, that they may lead us in renewing the ties of mutual respect which form our civic life, so that peace may prevail with righteousness and justice with order. We pray that you will strengthen their resolve as they lead our nation seeking to serve you in this world, that this good and generous country may be a blessing to the nations of the world. And may they lead us to become, in the words of Martin Luther King, members of a beloved community, loving our neighbors as ourselves, so that all of us may more closely come to fulfill the promise of our founding fathers, one nation under God, indivisible with liberty and justice for all. All this we ask in your most holy name. Amen.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States, the Honorable William H. Rehnquist.
The Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States, the 80-year-old William Rehnquist, making his way out through the west front steps of the Capitol. You can see he's dressed appropriately with a cap on his head. It's very cold here. He, of course, has been undergoing treatment for thyroid cancer, chemotherapy. Recently, some observers thought he would not be able to be here today. The crowd is giving him a warm reaction, a standing ovation.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's my pleasure to introduce one of today's most popularly acclaimed mezzo-sopranos, Miss Susan Graham of Texas, to sing Bless This House.
Graham from Midland, Texas, President Bush's adopted hometown, the mezzo-soprano, singing Bless This House.
Thank you, Susan. Please join me now in welcoming Senior Senator from Connecticut, the Honorable Christopher J. Dodd.
Live coverage on XM Satellite Radio of the inauguration of President Bush.
Thank you, Senator Lawton, President Mrs. Bush, Vice President Mrs. Cheney, our fellow citizens. The Vice President of the United States will now take the oath of office. His wife, Lynn, and their daughters, Elizabeth Cheney Perry and Mary Cheney, will hold the family Bible. I now have the honor to present the Speaker of the House of Representatives, the Honorable J. Dennis Hastert, to administer the oath of office to the Vice President, Richard Bruce Cheney. Mr. Speaker.
I, Richard Cheney, do solemnly swear.
I, Richard Cheney, do solemnly swear
that I will defend and support the Constitution of the United States.
That I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States
against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same.
That I will take this obligation freely.
That I take this obligation freely.
Without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion.
Without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion.
And I will well and faithfully discharge the duties of my office.
And I will well and faithfully discharge the duties of the office.
On which I'm about to enter, so help me God.
On which I'm about to enter, so help me God.
Congratulations.
Vice President of the United States, Richard B. Cheney, sworn in for a second term.
You're listening to live coverage on XM Satellite Radio of the 55th Presidential Inauguration. We are live on the west steps of the Capitol. I'm Scott Walterman, along with Melinda Woodstock from Capitol News Connection. The sun is actually starting to peek out of the clouds a bit.
We're very thankful for that.
It's very cold here in Washington, D.C., though not as cold as it has been at some past inaugurations.
In fact, in 1984, they had to move the inauguration indoors. Mm. The crowd is sitting down now. The mezzo-soprano, Denise Graves.
All we've been given by those who
Graves.
This is XM Satellite Radio's live coverage of the inauguration of President George W. Bush. We've now come to the point in the program that we've actually come here for.
That's right, and the crowds are still filling up here outside the Capitol and the West Front steps. We're just 40 feet away, in fact, less than that, from where the president is shortly to take the oath of office. Trent Lott, the former Senate Majority Leader, speaking now. And the crowds have been delayed getting here through all the extensive security. Now we see the Chief Justice Rehnquist stand up, the entire crowd now on their feet, and the President of the United States, George W. Bush, about to take the oath, Laura Bush, the Bush twins.
And repeat after me. I, George Walker Bush.
I, George Walker Bush.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will faithfully execute.
That I will faithfully execute.
The office of President of the United States.
The office of President of the United States.
And will to the best of my ability.
And will to the best of my ability.
Preserve, protect, and defend.
Preserve, protect, and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations.
And there you have it. That is, in fact, what all of this is about.
The U.S. Marine Band now playing Hail to the Chief, the crowds on their feet. It's hard to imagine more people crammed into a smaller space here on the steps of the U.S. Capitol, a specially constructed set, if you will, for the day. We're up here on this scaffolding where we can see the president. We're very close to where he's standing, in fact. His father looks so proud of him, the former president, George H.W. Bush, his mother, Barbara. We see the first lady in a startling white dress. Trent Lott again
on his feet. Chief Justice Rehnquist now making his way back into the building.
I think the cold would be very hard for someone, you know, that is having, you know, has had the health problems that the Chief Justice has been, of course, been fighting thyroid cancer.
The president has now been introduced by Senator Lott, and he makes his way to the podium for his inaugural address. Let's listen.
Vice President Cheney, Mr. Chief Justice, President Carter, President Bush, President Clinton, members of the United States Congress, Reverend clergy, distinguished guests, fellow citizens. On this day, prescribed by law and marked by ceremony, we celebrate the durable wisdom of our Constitution and recall the deep commitments that unite our country. I am grateful for the honor of this hour, mindful of the consequential times in which we live, and determined to fulfill the oath that I have sworn and you have witnessed. At this second gathering, our duties are defined not by the words I use, but by the history we have seen together. For a half a century, America defended our own freedom by standing watch on distant borders.